Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Aurelia Metals operating update. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be some comments made by Dan focusing on the last four to five ASX releases made by the company that can also be found on the Aurelia Metals website. This will then be followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I'd now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Dan Clifford. Please go ahead, Dan.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Dan Clifford. Thank you for your time this morning. Just before we get started, I just wanted to give a little bit of context behind the reason for the call today. And in particular, we've put out now five ASX releases over the last 4 weeks. A mixture of positives and negatives in there, but I think we continue to drive the business, but we are amidst some economic upheaval and some subsequent or consequential impacts on our operations. As the country and the states and the communities come to terms with the responses, in particular to COVID-19 at the moment. I did feel on the basis of the news flow from the company out to our shareholders and investors, certainly over the last week, somewhat of a burning need to be the voice, and certainly in this circumstance, the voice and the person behind the statements that have been put out, really to be able to give people confidence and some further insight into the actions the company are taking as we navigate through these waters that I think every industry and community group has to over or will have has had to and will continue to need to have to over the coming months. I think our approach to this is both a mixture of discipline in terms of planning and what we need to be putting in at a site level and a business level and some forward thinking. And although we have put out a fair bit of detail, I did want to have an opportunity to give particularly our shareholders and investors further insight into some of our actions and then open up into Q&A to open that up even further. Just for expectations this month, particularly on the back of the March quarter being completed, I will set the expectation now and clarity that I will be doing another conference call off the back of the publishing of the March quarter production report later this month. So we'll try a two-prong approach this month to keep the information flow timely. Let's start with the Peak plant upgrade. This was announced 11 March, and I think if I can summarise it quickly, it was successfully completed and commissioned within the $53 million budget, and as part of that, at the back end, certainly in the commissioning, we did test that up to the 800,000 tonne per annum capacity. We're very happy with the outcomes of the final build standard. The discipline in the commissioning of the plant, the performance of the plant, considering that it's a retrospective fit to an already operating site. The team on the ground needs to be absolutely commended for the work they did and also delivering not only a successful business outcome but also doing it in a very low-risk basis with very little injury or illness. The plant has been commissioned. We did commission up with lower grade copper lead zinc ores. And interestingly now, I think a couple of facts behind historically and then now where we're moving towards with the asset. But in the four quarters prior to December 19, Peak was operating predominantly off three ore sources, those being the Kronos Gold ores, Perseverance and Jubilee. Now as we look forward, the business is now moving towards seven ore types, and I think that's testament not only to the flexibility that we've opened up with this site, but it does open up some complexity too in the way the asset runs, and that's something that we will be driving hard for in terms of efficiency and planning as we move through the ore bodies. In that same announcement, just after that announcement, so towards the end of March, we did have a problem with the peak shaft, and in the same announcement we talked through some of the impacts of the COVID-19 dilemma for the country and the impacts on our guidance. With the peak shaft, we lost approximately 9 days of ore haulage. And I think in normal circumstances, a business over a 12-month or at least a half-year basis would be able to absorb this sort of production interruption. And then importantly, in this interruption, there was no damage. There was no significant cost implications of the faults in the shaft, and the protection fully worked. But I think the key catalyst behind informing the market of where we would end up for the quarter, or where we're likely to end up for the quarter, was that I felt there was a definite market expectation out there that the company's performance for the March quarter would be better than that of the early flag December quarter performance. And with this interruption towards the back end of the quarter, I think it was important that the shareholders needed to know then, not later, as part of the quarterly report. So that was the driving catalyst behind it. And I think just on some higher level numbers, the impact to the business with the hoisting capacity of over 2,000 tonnes a day, 9 days, lost haulage, including and some subsequent lower rates as we recommissioned things at a 4 to 5 gram head grade. You can see that we did lose defer a material number of ounces into the next quarter. Hot off the back of that was the impacts of COVID-19 in particular to our guidance. It's well publicised, it's well debated, it's well understood circumstances, but the period of time during mid to late March, there was substantial fluidity in particularly federal and state response and policy. And for us at that point of time, it wasn't about stopping, although that was, if we look around a lot of other industries, that was a real prospect if the infection rates couldn't be contained. But for us, it was about at what run rate we think we could run. The three key areas that of response and policy through the communities that impacted us were particularly the border crossings or entry into the country, the subsequent precautionary absences that we encountered as a result of a heightened awareness to flu-like symptoms and the symptoms of COVID-19 causing us to ensure that people didn't come to work in an unknown circumstance. And then followed by those, particularly what I would call well-established now social distancing standards within the community and industry that we needed to put through our sites. They are probably the key impacts to us. I think everyone will probably understand that, but I'd like to just give a little bit more insight as to why, at the end of the day, our guidance was withdrawn. And it's simply, as I said earlier, to us it wasn't about stopping. It was about us establishing at what run rate do we think we could run at, such that we could give shareholders a accurate, forecastable performance for the full year. And when it comes to certainly the border crossing and the precautionary absences, whilst the numbers aren't large, they can be on any one shift. We've suffered in some circumstances between 8 and 12 people off on any one shift. The mix and the timing was fluid as to when people were and weren't coming in for various reasons. But what is critical in the remaining labour on the site is actually the mix of people and skills on the site. And for us, with a percentage of fly-in, fly-out, whilst it's not as large as the residential and drive-in, drive-out in the region, it does form a pretty a material percentage of our shiftly resourcing. And particularly if we lose jumbo operators, drillers, supervisors and tradesmen, the on-the-ground impacts are hard to see from the outside, but I can assure you the work that's been done on the sites to alleviate that pressure, shuffle our contracting workforce and our own workforce around to ensure those impacts are minimised, has been quite a monumental task for the team over the last month. And finally, one of the really unseen impacts of this is in the social distancing. Our mantra, if you like, on how we approached protection of the people on our assets and the communities around us was to drive for what we call smaller groups, consistent groups and traceable groups. So those three lines basically underpins all the precautions we put into place on the sites to ensure that we could continue to run, even in the light of the uncertainty of the policy and response shifts from not only federal government, but the state and the community's expectations. The impact on that productivity, and it's easy to understand if you've been on a site before. It's easy to see and understand the frustration and the inefficiencies of how social distancing on our sites impacts the productivity. They're not large numbers, but on a cumulative basis, we needed to establish what that looks like such that we could understand what our run rate is in the go-forward position. I think we've managed very well. I think the discipline and the forward thinking that has gone into it between the AMI management teams and management groups and the PIBAR, and PIBAR is our main contractor, I think that work has been outstanding and the discipline applied has been great. For us, as I mentioned earlier, it wasn't so much about stopping, albeit like any large group of people, industrial, administrative, doesn't matter, there's always the risk of outbreak. Our role here was to ensure that we protected ourselves from that. And anything that we put into place has always been aimed at being able to put controls and measures into place that would last us for the long term. So not something that was just going to see us through for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month. It's about ensuring ourselves that we can run like these, with these impediments to our efficiency indefinitely. I think we're all in this together. We don't think it's going to be indefinite, but what that time frame looking forward is, we're not clear on. That work has been underway. As I said earlier, I'm confident that we've put the right measures into place. We have been verifying regularly to ensure that those separation measures are in place, but I thought it worthy to just give our shareholders and investors a little bit more detailed context behind some of the inefficiencies. We will, as we establish what that run rate of production on both assets looks like and our ability to plug labour gaps in a controllable fashion with redistribution of particularly of PIBAR's operators within the contract, we will establish ourselves what that run rate looks like over the next few weeks. And considering really in this circumstance, the fluidity in the policies and standards coming out has stabilised in our view now, and that is enabling us to establish what that run rate looks like coming forward. In addition to the work on the ground, the company has also been working very closely with our existing banking partners, and we're quite well advanced now in establishing a bolt-on working capital facility onto our existing and current facilities to ensure that we keep the balance sheet in a position of strength. So move through on to the latest exploration results. They primarily focused on Federation and Kairos. Some stunning results coming out of Federation. We will continue to build our knowledge in that area. We are aiming towards a maiden resource towards the end of this financial year, and have already commenced baseline environmental studies backed up with met mining and processing options for the business. As we stand now looking forward, I think it's pretty clear to see now that Federation will form the priority for us in exploration in and around Hera. Kairos returns what we would call modest results, particularly in copper mineralisation with some elevated gold. It's good to see that we can establish mineralisation in the area now. And in the next short to medium term period of time, the focus for that region now will come from underground drilling as the declines from top and side start to intercept the main Kairos ore body that will form the priority for Peak as well now. And finally, on to the most recent, which was the announcement of the head office relocation from Orange in New South Wales to Brisbane, and Tim Church's departure from Aurelia. I think the head office relocation for us it certainly wasn't a simple decision. There was a number of things that we tested to ensure that this was the right decision to make. And the options really for us were Orange, Brisbane, Sydney or Melbourne. And we locked down on Brisbane in the end, basically a couple of key reasons. The travel time to the site from Brisbane we've tested, and it's roughly equivalent to the drive time from site from Orange. So we're confident that aspect is dealt with. The pool of resources that we think the company needs to continue operations and with growth aspirations for the business, we believe the best pool of those resources to have both in-house and at hand on an external basis, we believe Brisbane is the best location for the office. And I think also, on a practical sense and for full disclosure, I myself live in Brisbane, as does Peter Trout, our COO, and I think we probably are a symptom of the key issue of resourcing of our business and what we think we need to go forward and why we think Brisbane was the best outcome for the company. And additionally, in comparison to looking at the capital cities, and I do exclude Orange from this comment, the costs to overheads for the business, Brisbane was by far the cheapest. And then I think, finally, just before I hand over to open Q&A, I'd like to take the opportunity now to thank Tim for his time with the company, 6 years through a significant and transformational asset purchase with the Peak. His work with the company has put us in good shape in terms of a platform in which to work forward, and I wish him the best into the future. Okay, I think with that, I've tried to summarise the key issues behind the four to five announcements over the last 4 weeks, and I'd like to open up to questions now.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. And if you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Dylan Kelly of Ord Minnett. Please go ahead, Dylan.
Oh, yes, good morning, Dan. Thanks very much for hosting the update. I mean, you've been pretty clear and probably one of the first to flag the potential for operational disruptions and how this is working, how this is impacting your business. I just wanted to dig into two points around labour disruption. So I just want to understand, you know, what's the state of labour availability after a couple of swings, and how's that impacting, you know, equipment utilisation as it currently stands? You mentioned 8 to 12 people on any shift. Do you have any real sense of where that stabilises now in terms of people movements?
Thanks, Dylan. It is starting to stabilise now. I think that I call it absenteeism, but really what I think the bulk of it is being precautionary absence. Those numbers peaked probably 2 weeks ago in that range, 8 to 12. They have started to back off now and at both sites now down into the 4 to 5s on a shiftly basis. So we're seeing that stabilise now. The disruption on equipment utilisation will decrease with that naturally as people are willing and able to come into work on a responsibility basis, that is. But the underpinning inefficiency that will remain, and it will remain whilst social distancing is a community expectation whilst we're in this pandemic, There will still remain inefficiencies in actually the movement of people and our guys in and out of the mines. This is particularly heightened for people with it being shaft access, in that, you know, these small groups that we're talking about are 4 to 5, if not less. And, you know, when we're used to moving people around in larger numbers, particularly in the man cage, you can see that what would normally take half an hour to 45 minutes to get people in and around the operations onto their piece of equipment and productive, that time frame's more or less doubled now. And it will remain like that whilst we're under these precautionary separation measures.
Okay, fair enough. So just in terms of how you try to stabilise labour availability from here, I mean, we've heard rumours of certain workforces relocating for longer stints, you know, 3 to 6 months or indefinite periods of time. Is that one avenue that you're exploring to have or to maintain headcount levels?
It certainly is, although I would say it is at the back end of our priority in terms of wanting to do it. Let's give a bit more insight into that comment. One of the benefits of the company is that we, you know, the underground production workforce is probably the larger proportion of both sites. And that is on both sites contracted with PYBAR. Now, PYBAR is a big company. They have a lot of people deployed under their banner. And we are starting to, when the border crossing implications and the community transfer risks were very heightened and new to people a couple of weeks ago. We were concerned at that point about ensuring that we could stabilise and rationalise where people were residing to what contracts they were working in. I think the PYBAR team had done work very well on that front to support us in those moves. We are seeing that settle down now to the point where our methodology is, and I said it a bit earlier, whatever we're putting into place, we want to be able to ensure that it's sustainable for longer than 6 weeks, 2 months. It needs to be, because we can't see when these sort of social distancing standards will be lifted or relaxed. For us, there is a finer point in this, and I think it's worthy of people understanding this, that you can't just flip a finger and move people between sites, particularly if they're not Aurelia sites. You have to be very careful when you do that. Additionally, you know, it's taken, what, 10 or 15 years in the industry to migrate towards the even time rosters that are generally run across these operations. So 2 weeks on, 1 week off, 1 week on, 1 week off, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, that they vary a little bit. The reason I say that it's not high on our list of priorities in terms of if we were forced to that position, we would, but we wouldn't go there lightly. And that is because we're actually turning people's work and non-work time on a fear by all of a sudden changing roster patterns, duration, and where people live. And sitting behind all of this, and our team will never let go of this, is that having those sort of impacts on people's lives, and this has to be balanced with keeping our operations running successfully and ensuring that the communities that we operate in and around are also protected from the risk of our activity. The least we can, the least that we can change or alter or turn those patterns on is the better, because of underlying all of this, the ongoing health and safety risk of people. You know, these sorts of changes are profound in what they do with people, and we have to ensure that we don't escalate the risks in which people are coming to work. So if we had to, we would, but it's not the highest on our priorities. I think we've got it in hand with the precautions we've put into place now.
Okay, great, Dan. And just in terms of where your labour's mostly coming from, so could you just give us a rough breakdown on residential and FIFO? And I think you mentioned in the past that this is a peculiar labour supply issue for you, because your labour is sort of in the middle of New South Wales, not necessarily taking people from, say, just the coastal towns, such as what would happen in Queensland, but you're getting people from a number of different locations, like as far away as, say, Tasmania or NZ. Can you just walk us through that again?
Yeah, I can. So the as stated in the ASX release, we do have people coming from Western Australia, South Australia, and this is particularly into peak. Western Australia, South Australia, Tasmania, Victoria, New Zealand, New South Wales and Queensland. And at the end of the day, it's not hard to rationalise why that's happening, because if you put a pinpoint on Cobar and zoom out to the East Coast, we're equidistant from a lot of the community areas that people will centre themselves in, or spread all around, and particularly on the very skilled workforce, so the jumbo operators, tradesmen, production drillers and supervisors. These guys are skilled, they are experienced, and the end result is that they can live wherever they want, and they do. That's why we have people coming from far and wide into our operations. So we are... we're not that different from a few other people being in that circumstance, but it is a phenomenon that we're trying to deal with. In terms of percentages, if I look at roughly at peak, it's about 65%, I would say, pie bar and contractors of the total FTE on the site, so roughly 65%, so two-thirds, and about 50%. Of that, so roughly 125 odd people are residential. The balance are either fly in or fly out, so roughly 50%. Of the percentage who are interstate, it's about 23%. So roughly 60 people from interstate within that fly-in, fly-out or drive-in, drive-out number. So you can see it's a material percentage of the total workforce on the site. HERA to a lesser extent. HERA at this stage, pretty similar sort of numbers of split between AMI and PIBO, in that roughly two-thirds of PIBO, and it's not surprising considering they're both underground operations, of which very little are residential in the region. The vast majority is drive-in, drive-out, and the interstate numbers are quite a bit less, in and around the sort of 13 to 14% total. So lesser impacted by the diversity of origination of the labour.
Okay, that's really helpful, Dan. I'll pass it along.
Thanks, Dylan.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Mark Milliken of Hartleys. Please go ahead, Mark.
Morning, Dan. Thanks very much for that. Just a very quick one on the run rates you're expecting in the coming weeks. Are you expecting, or should we expect, some throughput guides or, you know, a production guide for the June quarter?
Mike, a couple of things on that. You know, we withdrew guidance. We're very aware that we need to re-establish or restate guidance. You know, we certainly can't take it as a position of all bets are off. We're confident we'll be able to see what the run rate looks like and over this next few weeks. But I am making an assumption in there that there isn't any further substantial or material policy shift from either state or federal governments, and for that matter, any infection in the Cobar or certainly the operational mines. So the answer is yes, we will be looking to re-establish as soon as possible. We will be aiming for during this month, but we will. I'll leave that on notice for the time being. So I think in terms of what we will re-guide on is ounces and all-in sustaining costs as a minimum.
Cool. Thank you very much. And also, second one, just very quickly, changes to an exploration budget, obviously Focus, Federation, Kairos. Would we expect any changes there?
We have definitely trimmed some of the exploration budget. In fact, you know, I would doubt anyone would see this as a surprise. Not only has there been the heavy logistical exercise for our mine GMs and their teams to establish some resemblance for platform of control amongst this, but also a full effort from corporate right through the sites to ensure a principle of cash conservation. I think that's prudent in times of uncertainty. So exploration, we have trimmed for Q4, but we retain the focus, particularly on Federation, as it causes will be pretty much from an exploration perspective the core focus for us around Hera, and the maintenance, particularly near mine around Peak.
Cool. Thanks very much for that. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Andrew Bowler of Macquarie. Please go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, g'day, Dan. I actually had my two COVID-related questions already answered, but just a non-COVID-related question, I guess. How's the water situation at both operations? Are you starting to see some easing there of groundwater supply following some rain?
We are, yes. I actually just looked this morning and I see Burrendong Dam water level rising. It's actually through 12% now, which is, that's a great outcome for the district, I have to say. So from a water security perspective, you'll remember during certainly late December we had the approvals by approximately midway through the March quarter. We had the infrastructure in, particularly at peak, in terms of the access to the Northern Cobar old mined areas. That infrastructure has been built and is pumping. The final piece of work for us from water security perspective, particularly again at peak, is to the final installation and commissioning of the RO plant. But we believe we're in a very solid position now on both counts, in that we're approved, we're built, we're commissioned, we're pumping, we've got the final stages of water treatment coming in, and most certainly against the backdrop of Burrendong Dam water levels rising. So we believe that we're substantially de-risked compared to where we were 6 months ago.
Thanks for that. And also, just back on COVID, you talked about scaling back exploration spend, but maintaining that focus on Federation. Is there sort of still plans in place where, if there is an escalation, in restrictions, that you could further scale back Federation? And if that's the case, do you have enough drilling to date to still get that resource out by the end of this FY, or do you still have a few more holes you want to finalise before you start really getting into the estimation? Cheers.
No, I think logically, if there was further escalation in the pandemic, there is obvious targets for where you scale back first. It would be a difficult decision for us to scale back Federation, although it would be prudent, facing, a severe consequence for the business, be prudent to cut it completely. Although we could still put out a maiden resource, albeit not sort of optimal for where we are at the moment.
No, that's all from me. Thanks.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Sam Berridge of Perennial. Please go ahead, Sam. Pardon me, Sam, you may have yourself on mute.
Sorry, I think that's better. Dan, you made a comment there about peak, that due to that deferral of tonnes late in the March quarter into a June quarter, you referenced the head grade of 4 to 5 grams a tonne. That's what, 400 to 500% above what it was for the December quarter, and by the sounds of it, probably the March quarter. I'm just curious. Can we take that as indicative of the higher grades that I think we're always guided to for the June quarter?
Oh, pretty much, Sam. I think, without giving specific numbers that will come off the back of the quarterly production report in a couple of weeks, when I did a quick assessment of where we were sitting in terms of the material nature of the outage, with the background context of the market having a clear expectation, I had to do a quick assessment as to what those ounces look like, and we did that. So 4 to 5 grams a tonne, we have seen those grades before. There's no doubting we're going into a better head grade region for quarter four. We can clearly see that with what the full year guidance was and what our half year and now March position looks like. So the 4 to 5 grams might be, I think we will see some of that come through on average, maybe a little bit less, but I think in terms of a quick assessment on the impact of the quarter, it was a reasonable assessment for us.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Clifford for closing remarks.
Right. Well, thank you, everyone. I appreciate your time, particularly on 24 hours notice, and as I said earlier in the in the presentation today that I will be doing another quarterly, another investor conference call off the back of the quarterly release. So thank you very much, and I hope everyone has a great Easter. Thank you.